So the first verse we're on, if you want to turn to it, you're welcome to, is verses 43 to 47. I'm reading from the NIV version. Doesn't really matter which one you're reading from. Pretty much says the same thing. So it says, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell, where the fire never goes out. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than to have two feet and be thrown into hell. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to enter with two eyes and be thrown into hell. It's quite a heavy verse to start with, isn't it? Now, I was doing this, my sermon at work, and I read it out loud, and it freaked a lot of people out, this verse, as it does, because they just take it literally. Like God has said, if you do this, you've got to cut your foot off. That's not what he means. If you notice, when God speaks, he never actually speaks in a literal sense. It's usually with parables or in riddles. Now, why do you think he does that? He could just say it quite simply to you, couldn't he? Do you understand this? No? Okay, well, I'll explain it to you. He doesn't do that. He wants you to delve much deeper into it rather than just have it spoon-fed to you. He wants you to actually look into its true meaning and study his word to learn more about him. After all, it is supposed to be a relationship and not a dictatorship. When you're in a relationship with someone, you take the time to figure out what they mean when they say something. A classic example, which I've seen many a time, is when a woman says she's fine, she does not mean fine. And you have to figure out why she's not fine. And it takes a man a very long time to figure out why that is. But we're not straightforward creatures, unfortunately. God is the same. He wants you to figure it out for yourself. He's not just going to tell you to it. Okay. Right. When it says, pluck your eye out, like I said, it doesn't mean in a literal sense. It means things that are not good for you to see, he wants you to stay away from them. There's a verse in the Bible that says, focus on things that are of good report. I'm paraphrasing because that's a massive long chapter, but that's what it means. There's a very, very old saying which says, the eyes are the window to the soul. Everyone's heard that. And I think that's quite scriptural, really. If your eyes, what you take in does come out eventually. You start to mimic it in your life, and then it just takes over. Recently, many of you don't know this, but I've been doing a teaching course to train to be a TA, and I've had to learn about a lot of things to do with children, some of which are not very nice, and I am going to speak about them today, which I bet you thought didn't come out. One of which is the effect of pornography on a child's brain. It's a very touchy subject, isn't that? We don't really want to discuss that in church. It's not something you should say. Not something a pastor's daughter should be saying from the pulpit. Pornography, that's not okay. But it does happen. And it does affect a child and how they develop. But unfortunately, in school, they're saying it's normal. It's an expression of the child, you know. Let them do what they do. They can do what they want to do. And then we'll just, you know, we'll look after them in later life. Was the impression I got from my class. Which I challenged, because I'm not very good at sitting there and being like, yeah, okay, that's okay, that's normal, because it's not normal. It says very clearly in the Bible, God wants you to think on things that are of a good report, that are good for your brain. It's not good for your brain. At the moment, the thing God's been pressing on me is how important children are. In this day and age, they're not seen as important, unfortunately. Sadly, I've been in school where some of them are not even seen as being worthy of being taught. They just shove them in a corner and give them an iPad and say, here you go. You do that, and I'll go and sort up the other children who are much more worthy of my time. That does happen in schools. But God focuses on children quite a lot in the Bible. In verse 36, it says, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but welcomes the one who sent me. So in other words, he's saying, if you're teaching the children, you're bringing them up in my word, in my way, you're bringing them up with God. They should be one and the same. They should have that relationship where they're the same. In Ecclesiastes, I read recently, and I know this has been said many a time, this verse. It's verse 4 to 12. It says, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves, but a threefold cord is not easily broken. Now, whenever you hear that, it's usually at a wedding. Only time I've ever heard it, really, is at a wedding. It's, you know, the groom, the bride, and God. That's what the threefold cord means. But I've been looking into it a bit further, and God's been speaking to me about it, and he said, it doesn't actually say that. That's what people associate it with, but it doesn't say that. So he's given me a kind of new meaning of it, which you can take if you want. You don't have to take it. It's just what God's told me to say, so I'm going to say it. But he said a threefold cord should be more like a parent, God, and the child. They should all be brought up in the same way, that threefold cord. Obviously, I was brought up that way, so I can attest it's a good upbringing. I wouldn't fault my parents. I know they're not perfect, but they brought us up in the way we should have gone. They looked after us, and they told us the importance of knowing God. Not just knowing God because they brought us to church, but actually knowing him for yourself, which is very important, and I am very grateful. They're not here today, so it's a little less embarrassing to say that, but I am very grateful for what they've done. Whenever, for those of you who don't know me, I work in a spa, and I have a lot of clients who come to me, and they'll be on the bed, and they'll just tell me their life story, and a lot of it is to do with their upbringing, like the parents, and how their life was as a kid. Not all of it's good, unfortunately. So it is really important, and it does have an impact on you. So children, I can only see a few, you should appreciate your parents, and parents equally, you should appreciate your children. Right. In Matthew 18, verses 1 to 5, it says, he called a little child to me, placed the child among them, and he said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes a lowly position of this child is the greatest in heaven. Why do you think he says lowly? Because children are seen as quite low when you on the spectrum of things. You know, like you're a child, you don't know anything. That's how it goes. When you're a child, you know nothing. Then you get to a teenager and you know everything. You have not a clue, but you think you know everything. And then you get to an adult, and you're like, yeah, I know everything, I'm fine. But a child is very teachable. Very teachable. I have a little nephew who'll be turning one next month, and he will copy everything you do. Everything. And he learns very quickly, and that's how children are. So whatever you're putting into them does come out. So I think when God's saying he wants you to be like little children, saying you need to go back to the time when you were teachable, when you weren't like you knew everything and you know everything was about you. Kids are fearless. If you've ever met a kid, nothing stops them. Nothing at all. this last week, I looked after my nephew because my parents are away. And we discovered we have mice in our house. I am terrified of mice. My nephew, however, is not terrified of mice. He wants to go and play with them and pull the tails and mess with them. So I'm there freaking out, and he's just like, no, it's fine, everything's fine. I'm like, it's really not fine. But it's that kind of fearlessness that he's talking about. You're not fearless. When I think back to when I was a kid, I would do whatever I wanted. If someone told me I couldn't do something, I'd go and do it because I wanted to prove I could do it. I didn't really care, to be perfectly honest. I didn't care what anyone thought. I think now, as an adult, we tend to care quite a lot what people think. Quite a lot. Even as teenagers, you start to care a lot what people think. We had a mental health seminar recently called Isaiah 61, which is We've only done twice, but it's going very well. And a lot of people, they talked about how they didn't really have meaning in their life. They didn't actually want to live, some of them. That's quite sad, isn't it? I watched a film with my mum the other week. Some of you may have seen it. It was called Last Christmas. I apologize, but I'm about to spoil it. But the story goes like this. There's a girl who is very unhappy with her life. Very unhappy. Thinks her life's rubbish. Is not really worth living. She's just not impressed with it at all. She's had a heart transplant, so she's actually had a new life given to her. But it doesn't really matter much to her. She's not, she doesn't appreciate it. She got a really bad relationship with parents, so she just kind of leaves it. She was sleeping on other people's beds, and nobody would have her because she was just that, like, I don't really care about life. I'm not going to think about people's safety or things like this. And she meets this guy. It's supposed to be a love story, this, but there's a much deeper meaning, I promise. And he gets to know, and he keeps saying to her, look up, look up. And she looks up, and she's living in London. She sees all these things she's never seen before. She'd been living there a very long time, like brought up there, but hadn't actually seen everything going on around her. And she thinks very like lowly of people. So there's a load of homeless people he helps out. And she's just like, no, I don't want to deal with them. That's her take on life. Her life's worth nothing. Everyone else's life is also not worth anything. It goes further into the story, and she discovers that this man is actually not real. So he gave her his heart, and it's like, what's you call it? Not a ghost. That's not the right word. An angel, I guess, is how he's portrayed. So she got to meet the guy who gave his life literally for her, and he's showing her all the things that are worthwhile. And little by little, she changes. She starts to help the people around her. She gets like a better relationship with parents and things like that. And it got me thinking, because you know it's a chick flick. This is nothing really sentimental. But as I was doing my preach, God spoke to me. He said, there are loads and loads of people who I've saved, and they don't care. They're living her life where there's nothing to live for. There's actually nothing to live for. They don't want to go out or do anything, particularly in this day and age with COVID. I still know loads of people who won't step out the front door because they're scared, and they, you know, life is just not worth it anymore. But he said, what I think Christians forget is that we know him. We actually know him. She was getting to know this guy who saved her life, but we actually know God. So this is where I had a bit of, conviction, because I did have one of those moments where I was like, oh, my life is so annoying. I've got so much to do. It never ends. Do not have a break. It's just not worth it. And he was like, how can you say that when I've saved you and I've brought you into something greater? How can you say, like, your life's not worth anything? I wouldn't have saved you if your life wasn't worth anything. I was like, do you think I'd go to all the trouble of, you know, getting tortured and dying on a cross for you to just say, my life's not worth anything. I'm not really bothered today. I don't want to go to work. Don't want to go to church. Don't want to do anything. This is, by the way, for me. If any of you felt it as well, that's fine, but this was the hammering I got this week. But he said, you need to go back to the time where it didn't matter. You didn't have, when you think about when you were a kid, you had no jobs, you had no responsibilities, you had no things that took your attention away from me. You just wanted to spend your time solely with me. And he was like, a lot of people have forgotten that because they're too busy. Particularly now, we're too busy with getting on with our life after, you know, COVID. He was like, I gave you months where you could just spend time with me. I was like, oh, that's a big hit. Like, can't really say that, can you? God caused COVID. I don't think he caused it. I don't think he caused it at all, but I think he gave us an opportunity. And I've seen the fruits of the opportunity. When people have used it, I've seen the change. Me and Mum, run a food bank on, I need to remember the days now, it keeps changing, Friday and Saturdays. It was Tuesdays and Fridays. And we just did it solely ourselves. God told her to do it because he prepared her. Like, just like Joseph, he told her, this is going to happen. Something is going to happen. I need you to prepare. And it happened. And sure enough, we were prepared. And we were managed to get food to loads and loads of people during COVID who had no jobs, no stuff like that. But we're seeing it's not wasted effort. Like Dad said on the pulpit the other day, he got really, not annoyed with it, but kind of like, it's all a waste of time. Nobody actually appreciates it and this and that. I was like, it's not true. If God's told us to do it, which was her response, by the way, he's got a plan. And that's been proven this week alone because it was just, well, it was me, Mum, and Uncle Eddie, actually, doing everything. Since he's gone, though, there are people who've stepped up to the plate. And that is the fruits of what God said to do. If you follow what God says to do, he will look after you. Because Mum's been away this past week, we've not been able to pick up the food or anything. I don't drive, so that's not been possible. But there are people who came through the program who volunteered to go and get it and bring it to everyone to share it about. And a lot of those people didn't actually feel like their life was worth living at the time. I've had conversations with some of them, and it's heartbreaking what people went through in COVID. Like I was saying, the mental health that is going on at the moment, it is huge. But it was like, if you can come back to that time when you're a kid and you don't think about all the worries of the world, you don't think about anything like that, then I can be there. I can help you. I can reform your mind and teach you properly how to deal with things. But if you carry on where you're an adult and you're like, nope, I know what I'm doing now. I've not got time for anyone. I've not got time for the world. It's just, you know, for some people I know, it's just literally work, go out, work. That's how they're formed. That's how their life goes. It doesn't get much better than that. I was there. This is another controversial thing I'm going to say. I was in a club last night. Also another thing you didn't think I'd say from the platform. It was my friend's birthday and we went out. And I was looking around at all these people and I was thinking, this is as good as it gets. This is actually as good as it gets for them. That is a real, real shame because they're relying on all the other people around them and they're not actually, that's the biggest meaning they've got to their life. It's just go out with their friends and most of them are getting quite drunk. But that's as good as it's getting at the moment. If they knew, if they understood what plans God has, if he's seen how he's changed lives. I've seen it. I've seen how he's changed lives drastically. My parents are a witness to that, because before they were Christians, they would be the ones in the club going out drinking every night. My dad was in a lot of debt because he was a gambler. All these things happened, and my mum, who never ever thought she'd have children, she was told she couldn't have children, had 8, and they were promised from God. He keeps his promises, but he needs you to go back to trusting him wholeheartedly like a child. You need to grab hold of his hand and say, look, I actually don't know where I'm going. Can you please lead me? Because I'm lost right now. The world is turning upside down. I'm going to sound like my dad now, but he is right. It's only going to get worse. Very sadly, it is only going to get worse, and it's only going to get darker, and we need to be the light in the world, because let me tell you, there is not much light in the world at the moment, and it starts from down low. It starts in schools. It starts with kids. So please never, ever think that you're not doing a great job when you're telling kids about God or when you're bringing your kids up. You're doing the best job you could possibly do, particularly in this day and age. But The Sunday school team are fantastic. The ones who dedicate their time to look after the kids. Let me tell you, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. It's not easy in a mainstream school. I've learned that the past few weeks. But in Sunday school, actually teaching them the importance of God, it's a much more important lesson. It's crucial. And that is currently what the devil is targeting. Children. And it is actually really heartbreaking, but when we know for certain that he's going to look after us in that state, then all the other worries are not going to matter. They don't matter to the children, let me tell you that. I'm petrified of all the things going on I've got to do in my life, and my nephew is just chasing a mouse. Not bothered. Nothing at all, no worries, no cares, just completely, that's fine. But he's also really trusting of me. He's not known me, he's known me what? It's not even a year yet. But he's really, really trusting to the point where if I tell him to do something, he'll do it. You have a lot of power over children, let me tell you, a lot. And what you say to them sticks. So if you make sure what you say into them is from God, you can never go wrong in that department. Never. That is actually all God told me to say today, but I have like 15 minutes left. Well, that's okay. If there is anything else, I'm sure it will come, but that is basically what I need to impress on you today. If you need to go back to being like a child, just trust me wholeheartedly, like a child would. I've got your hand, I'm leading you wherever you need to go. It doesn't matter. When a kid is crossing the street, they don't think about the cars going back and forth. They're holding on to someone's hand until they say they can go. But if you let go of that hand, and I've seen children do this, they run straight across the road and they're in danger then. You let go of my hand, you need to grab hold of it again, and I'll lead you the right way.